Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Talking about part 7, chapter 12. Anna shakes head disappointedly. In today's episode, I summed up, yesterday's episode, but this is yesterday's discussion prompt. In today's episode, I summed up Anna in the least flattering terms. What is your summary of Anna? What's up with Vronsky anyway? Is his heart really in it? Charolette said, Anna is in a self-defeating spiral. She gave up her entire life to be with Vronsky, so she's terrified of what would happen to her if Vronsky stopped loving her. In response, she becomes needy and clingy and picks fights, which makes her fears more likely to come true. It breaks my heart to read. If Vronsky still loves her, I think Vronsky still loves her, but is understandably fed up with her behavior. They keep having the same fight, and it gets more grating every time. Swim said the mama fishy said, I first read Anna Karenina when I was 19. Then I was so impatient with Anna, and actually quite angry at her behaviour, the whole morphine addiction, postpartum depression, societal constraints of the 19th century Russia went right over my head. But now that several decades have passed for me since then, and a lot of life has gotten lived, I feel much empathy for Anna and her plight, and so sad her actions are just making everything worse for her. Funny how a bit of time changes your perspective, isn't it? Yeah, I suppose postpartum depression as well, if that's factoring in. And, of course, the little catch-22 that she's in with the whole divorce situation where it's just, you can't get a divorce without it sucking for everyone involved. There's no way to just do it peacefully. That would suck too. And morphine addiction is no walk in the park either. So, yeah, I suppose maybe we should all be feeling a bit of empathy for Anna. As frustrating as she is, maybe we can still have some sympathy. I Am Norwegian said, I stumbled into some old friends yesterday in our capital, and one 4 o'clock beer turned into a long day/night of drinking. Rip my participation and reading streak. Though, since the new post isn't up yet, I technically didn't miss a day, right? Correct. You got in. All good. The description of the unwritten rules that made Anna and Vronsky unable to really get anywhere was insightful. I wonder if Vronsky realizes just how much Anna is struggling. Her thinking that everything she does, except morphine, is just worse morphine in another form, is yet another really big red flag. So that comment, I'm Norwegian, was posted 11 minutes ago, according to Reddit. 11 minutes ago. So as long as you get your comment in before the podcast is recorded, I think you made the cut. And you know what? You made it by 11 minutes. So streak intact. Your reputation is still perfect. Anna.
I
feel like you could easily get down that path, right? Right? I mean, it's not a difficult thing to find yourself in an addiction, down and out, you know. What am I talking about? I'm zoning out here. I'm really tired. Just done 2 big days of work at the winery, plus a little bit of Uber driving at night, both nights. And I don't know if my brain is working or not. I've got a feeling it might not be. Hard to tell. Chapter 13 goes like this. There are no conditions of life to which a man cannot accuse himself. I just realized, like, as I was talking before, what was I talking about, Anna? That I wasn't even listening to myself. Like, I was looking across the room and trying to read, like, the blurb on a book that's over there upside down and the wrong way around. And And like, meanwhile, I was just automatically chit-chatting to you about Anna Karenina. Kind of called myself up on it and was like, mate, you're talking into a microphone and recording it and sending it out to people to listen to, and you're not even paying attention. God damn. I need a good night's sleep. There are no conditions of life to which a man cannot accustom himself, especially if he sees that everyone around him lives the same way. That's a good observation, isn't it? I think there's a lot of truth in that. 3 months previously, Levin would not have believed that he could quietly fall asleep under the circumstances in which he now found himself asleep, that while leading an aimless, senseless life, one, moreover, that was above his means, after tippling, he could call what had happened in the club by no other name, after showing unsuitable friendship to the man with whom his wife had once been in love, and after a still more unsuitable visit to a woman who could only be called a fallen woman, and after being allured by her and having grieved his wife, that in such circumstances he could quietly fall asleep. But under the influence of weariness, a sleepless night, and the wine he had drunk, he slept soundly and peacefully. At 5 in the morning, the creak of an opening door awoke him. He jumped up and looked around. Kitty was not in the bed beside him, but on the other side of the partition a light was moving, and he heard her step. "What is it? What is it?" he muttered, not yet quite awake. "Kitty, what is it?" "Nothing," said she, coming candle in hand from beyond the partition. "I only felt a little unwell," she added with a peculiarly sweet and significant smile. "What, has it begun, has it?" he asked in a frightened voice. "We must descend," and began to dress hurriedly. "No, no," she said, smiling, holding him back with her hand. "I'm sure it's nothing. I only felt slightly unwell, but it is over now." She came back to her bed, put out the candle, lay down, and remained quiet, though that quietness, as if she were holding her breath, and especially the peculiar tenderness and animation with which, returning from the other side of the partition, she had said, "It's nothing," seemed to him suspicious, yet he was so sleepy that he fell asleep at once. Only afterwards he remembered that bated breath and realized all that had passed in her dear sweet soul while she lay motionless by his side, awaiting the greatest event of a woman's life. At 7 o'clock he was awakened by her touch on his shoulder and soft whisper. She seemed to hesitate between regret at waking him and desire to speak to him. "Kostya, don't be frightened, it's nothing. But I think we must send for Mary Vlasevna." The candle was burning again. She was sitting on the bed, holding in her hands some knitting she had lately been doing. "Please don't be frightened, it's nothing. I'm not a bit afraid," she said on seeing his alarmed face. And she pressed his hand to her breast, then to her lips. He jumped up hastily, hardly aware of himself, and without taking his eyes off her, put on his dressing gown and stood still, gazing at her. It was necessary for him to go, but he could not tear himself away from the sight of her. He had loved that face and known it all its expressions and looks, but he had never seen her as she was now. How vile and despicable he appeared to himself before her, as she now was, when he recollected the grief he had caused her yesterday. Her flushed face, surrounded with soft hair that had escaped from beneath her nightcap, shone with joy and resolution. Little as there was of affectation and conventionality in Kitty's general character, yet Levin was astonished at what was revealed to him now that every veil had fallen, and the very kernel of her soul shone through her eyes. And in this simplicity, this nakedness of soul, she whom he loved was more apparent than ever. She looked at him smilingly, but suddenly her eyebrows twitched. She raised her head, and coming quickly to him, she took hold of his hand, and clinging close, she enveloped him in her hot breath. She was suffering and seemed to be complaining to him of her pain, and for a moment, from force of habit, he felt as if he were in fault. But her look expressed a tenderness which told him that she not only did not blame him, but loved him because of those sufferings. "If I am not to blame for it, who is?" he thought, involuntarily seeking a culprit to punish for these sufferings. But there was no culprit. She suffered, complained, triumphed in her sufferings, rejoiced in them, and loved them. He saw that something beautiful was taking place in her soul, and what it was he could not understand. It was above his comprehension. I have sent for Mama, and you go quickly and fetch Mary Vlasevna. Kostya, no, it's nothing. It's past. She moved away from him and rang. Well, go now. Pasha is coming. I am all right. And Levin saw with amazement that she again took up the knitting which she had fetched in the night and recommenced working. As Levin went out at one door, he heard the maid enter the other. He stopped at the door and heard Kitty give detailed instructions to the maid, and with her help herself moved the bed. He dressed, and while the horse was being harnessed, for it was early and no izvoshchiks were about yet, he ran back to the bathroom. He ran back to the bathroom, not on tiptoe, but as it seemed to him, on wings. Two maids were busy moving something in the bedroom. Kitty was walking up and down and knitting rapidly, throwing and thread, the thread, over the needle and giving orders. I'm going straight to the doctor's. They have already gone for Mary Vlasevna, but I will call there too. Is anything else wanted? Oh yes, to Dolly. She looked at him, evidently not listening to what he was saying. Yes, yes, go, she said rapidly, frowning and motioning him away with her hand. He was already on his way through the drawing room when suddenly a piteous moan that lasted only a moment reached him from the bedroom. He stopped, and for a moment could not understand it. Yes, it was she, he said, and clasping his head with his hands, he ran downstairs. Lord have mercy, pardon and help us. He repeated the words that suddenly and unexpectedly sprang to his lips, and he, an unbeliever, repeated those words not with his lips only. At that instant he knew that neither his doubts nor the impossibility of believing with his reason, of which he was conscious, at all prevented his appealing to God. It all flew off like dust. To whom should he appeal if not to him, in whose hands he felt himself, his soul, and his love to be? The horse was not yet ready, but feeling particularly energetic, physically strong and alert to meet what lay before him, so as not to lose a moment, he did not wait for it, but started off on foot, telling Kuzma to catch him up. At the corner he encountered a knight, Izvoshchik, hurrying along. In the little sledge sat Mary Vlasevna, in a velvet cloak with a shawl over her head. Thank God, he muttered, recognizing with delight her little blonde face, which now wore a particularly serious and even severe expression. Without stopping the izvoshchik, he ran back beside her. So it began about 2 hours ago, not more, she asked. You will find the doctor, but don't hurry him, and get some opium at the chemist's. So you think it may go all right? God have mercy and help us, said Levin, as he saw his horse coming out of the gateway. Jumping into the sledge beside Kuzma, he ordered him to drive to the doctor's. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. It looks like we've got a baby coming? Question mark. That's exciting. Have your say over at the subreddit. Thanks for being here and listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.